This is a special report from ABC Radio News.
ABC Saigon calling ABC New York.
Hello, ABC New York.
ABC New York calling ABC Saigon.
Hello, New York. Hello, New York. This is ABC Saigon calling ABC New York.
Vietnam Update. The 38th weekly report on the U.S. fighting man in Vietnam. Everything is real. The voices, the situations, the actual combat. Vietnam Update, Report Number 38, The Real Story of War in Vietnam. Here is ABC Newsman Don Gardner.
DMZ, three initials which were projected into the limelight of the Vietnam War this week. DMZ, part of the alphabet of warfare. Those letters mean demilitarized zone, a narrow stretch of land 6 miles wide that straddles the 17th parallel, that imaginary line that is the very real boundary between North and South Vietnam. The DMZ came into being in 1954 with the Geneva Agreements ending the French War against the Communists and when Vietnam was split in two. The DMZ is supposed to be just that, demilitarized. Neither side is supposed to have any kind of armaments or war machinery in the area, and theoretically Canada, India, and Poland are supposed to see that the DMZ stays a DMZ. But in fact, the DMZ has become a staging area for North Vietnamese troops infiltrating South Vietnam. The massive Operation Hastings of the past weeks was fought just south of the DMZ against North Vietnamese regulars who came into South Vietnam through the zone. Well, this week, the United States splashed its war effort over the boundaries of the DMZ. A military briefer in Saigon announced that American B-52 bombers from Guam bombed communist military targets in the DMZ. The briefing officer said this.
It went in about 5:10 before dawn this morning. They hit an ammo dump, a weapons supply storage area, 26 gun positions known to be in this target area, and extensive fortifications. It was in the DMZ. It was in the southern half of the DMZ. The first time the B-52s have hit in the DMZ, deliberately. They have been using the DMZ as a infiltration area and point. In fact, the most of this 324th B division came through the DMZ. And we've had visual and photo recce aircraft that reported large concentrations of troops in the DMZ, and they've been receiving intense to moderate anti-aircraft fire in the zone itself in the DMZ.
Through the week, the big B-52s returned again and again, 3 times in 6 days to plaster the DMZ. Their targets suspected communist staging areas, infiltration routes, gun batteries, and supply depots. North Vietnam has protested the bombing attacks, but even as those protests were being made, there were reports that the United States might even send ground troops into that part of the DMZ that is inside South Vietnam. That would certainly heat up the ground action in that northern part of Vietnam, where fighting has diminished following an apparent Marine Corps victory over communist regulars in Operation Hastings. Now, ABC's Ed Needham filed this report on ground action in South Vietnam.
Ground action in the Vietnam War picked up today in 4 separate engagements near Plei Khu in Operation Paul Revere, which began May 10th. A company-sized unit of the 3rd Brigade Task Force of the 25th Infantry Division ran into an enemy battalion, called in airstrikes and artillery, and at last word, the battle was continuing. Another company from the same unit had a short firefight with an enemy force of unknown size early this morning, then made contact with another enemy force later. That battle reported still in progress. A 3rd company had a brief firefight in the same general area. No casualty reports available at this time. Ed Needham, ABC, Saigon.
At least 9 battles in the past year or so have been waged in the area of the Yad Drang Valley, located in the central highlands of Vietnam, and already in the history books as the scene of some of the most savage fighting of the Vietnam War. On Wednesday, as part of Operation Paul Revere, U.S. helicopters landed more than 10,000 troops in the Yad Drang Valley to do battle with the communists again. Now, a late report on Operation Paul Revere, again from ABC's Ed Needham in Saigon.
A new report from Operation Paul Revere came in today. The enemy killed in action toll has risen to 32. as a result of a battle which took place on the 2nd of August. The operation is continuing at this time, but light contact has been reported all over for the last 24 hours. Friendly casualties are remaining light since the beginning of the operation on the 10th of May.
That was ABC's Ed Needham with the latest word on Operation Paul Revere. In one incident this week, 9 1st Cavalry troopers survived a battle by playing dead. Originally, 26 men were attacked by the communists. And while it looked like the Yodrang Valley would again be a major battlefield encounter between the United States and the communists, the air war went on in the skies over North and South Vietnam. The B-52 raids in the DMZ, B-52 raids on Viet Cong troop concentration 25 miles from Saigon, and support flights for Operation Paul Revere in the Yodrang Valley were coupled with new air raids against oil facilities in the north. Now, the communists accused the United States of deliberately hitting civilians in Haiphong. What is it like to fly an attack mission? Listen as Air Force man Ron Sears flies along on a mission in an F-100 fighter bomber with Captain Bob Connors.
Be your takeoff, taxiway.
642, hold you short.
Hold it.
Okay, I'll release the brakes and then I'll light the burner and there'll be a little pause while it takes the light.
Is that
there we go. And we'll raise the nose up a little bit. And there we got flying speed, so we'll just lift on off, pull the gear up.
Easy.
Okay, we get about 220 knots, and then we climb on up out of the low altitude. A lot of times people will stand out here and shoot at us off the end of the runway.
Uh-oh.
So we like to get up high as soon as we can.
Let's see, I believe our call sign is Ramrod 5-3, isn't it?
That's affirmative. The call sign for the flight is 5-1.
Ramrod 5-1, be advised, there's a Tiger flight working on your target now.
Got it.
That's Paris Controller you hear in the background talking to our flight lead.
Well, Bill, how far are we from the Cambodian border now?
We're not too far. You can look off about 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock to us, and that's Cambodia. I'd say we're right now about 15, 20 miles from it.
I may believe this plane would fly this smoothly.
Oh, man, this is the way to fly, isn't it?
This is the only way to fly.
We use this river here as a... from a... bail out point of view as a dividing line. And we figure if you bail out to the west of this river, you're in bad shape.
Let's go east.
That's right. The further east you can go, the better off you are. Well, I better check my sight here and get everything set up.
Maybe up to the south.
I'll play on about 30 degrees, 400 knots. See the little fact down there in the light aircraft? You may not be able to see him. But he's flying directly over the target now, and he's getting what he calls a BDA. He'll look at it and estimate the damage done to the target. He'll give it to the flight lead, and then they'll report it back through channels, through intelligence, debriefing, and so forth.
Join it up, Tiger.
And just a minute or so, you'll hear him come on and give the BDA to the Tiger flight.
What does BDA stand for exactly?
It stands for the Bomb Damage Assessment.
Okay, there. 2-1, pulling off here to the southwest, stand by for BDA. Can we go ahead and extend on that?
This flight with Air Force Captain Bob Connors of Murphy, North Carolina, is a mission flown by Captain Connors' 531st Tactical Fighter Squadron, hitting targets near Bien Hoa. Listen and ride along.
Okay, Lee, real good, Ben. Sorry about that.
That's a favorite expression here in Vietnam, isn't it?
It seems to be.
Now, this area down here, there's a crossroads. One crossroad heading west, one crossroad heading north. We'll be striking right at the intersection of the crossroad, and Hooch is coming down towards the south. I'll be going ahead and mark the area as soon as you get a tally on it.
Okay, he's going to fire a smoke rocket now. I'm going to try to bend right across the target here and get a look at it. You see his mark down there?
No, I've lost it.
Okay, it's just some white smoke on the ground now. The wind's pretty well dissipated. It's about 10 o'clock.
Oh, I see it now.
Right, it's going across. We're going to hit those trees in there. There's some buildings inside there. They're very hard to see from this altitude, but when we get down low, you'll see them.
Cottonmouth, Ramrod 5-3's in. I have rockets now being from the east also.
Roger, we're cleared to hit anything in that area running from the road just short of where my last bomb hit onto the river.
Okay. How you feeling?
Fine.
Okay. Let me know if you start to feel sick. It'll build up on you real quick. 5-3 will be rolling in from the northeast in about 10 seconds. We'll get one more pass in, then we'll take it real easy.
I think I'm all right now.
Yeah, well, it's the high G's and the turns that'll get you, like this.
I got a nose fire.
You doing any better now?
Oh, I think I'm okay now.
Okay, we'll just kind of orbit here for a while, and if you feel like you can hack it, we'll make one strafe pass, just so you can tell us.
You're on an F-100 combat mission in Vietnam, in the air near Bien Hoa. The pilot is Captain Bob Connors of the U.S. 531st Tactical Fighter Squadron.
Fire 1, this is 5-3. I haven't caught up with you exactly where you're strafing right now.
Okay, we're working pretty much at the eastern end of that initial square up along the road that runs north and south.
Okay. That bother you then?
I feel okay now.
Okay, we'll come around there and we'll get that building.
You can see it real well from the west.
And 5-3's rolling in. I got the building in sight.
And 5-3, anything from there out toward the river on the south side of the road is fair.
Okay, Roger. I'll put them right on that little building now. Okay, we'll head back now and see if we can get us an instrument recovery. We're down to 2,800 pounds of fuel, and we should be thinking about landing when we get that low.
You have to burn up all your fuel before you land?
No, there is no fuel restrictions on the F-100. You can land at any gross weight you want to.
All right, sir.
Ramrod 5-3, request heading and altitude.
All right, Ramrod 5-3 is heading 120, 15,000 feet, and I'm squawking 304. Okay, right now, we're talking to the approach controller into Bien Hoa, and he's going to identify us on his radar scope, and then he'll give us headings in. We'll make an instrument-type recovery.
18 miles to the northwest of Bien Hoa. Maintain heading 090. Center maintain flight level 50. If no transmission I received for 1 minute, go to the Bien Hoa track in.
Now see, we fly the heading and the altitude he gives us, and he'll line us up with the runway eventually.
Oh, I see.
Runway straight ahead of me.
That was a jet flight in an F-100. But jets aren't the only aircraft in use in Vietnam. Some men fly older and slower propeller planes like the A-1. The A-1 is a plane built just after World War II. ABC's Roger Peterson decided to get the real dope in what might seem to be an old-fashioned way to fight a jet-age war. But Peterson found out that the A-1s have their uses. What Peterson didn't realize was that the men who fly the A-1s are proud men, as proud as the jet pilots. Get two of them together in front of an ABC microphone, and you get a debate on the pros and cons of jets and prop planes. Roger Peterson was never known for avoiding a battle, and on board the U.S. carrier Intrepid, he stood between Navy Lieutenant Commander Ron Pickett of West Covina, California, an A-1 pilot, and Lieutenant Commander Dick Wood of Lemoore, California, who flies an A-4 jet. Peterson asked the two flyers to talk about their planes.
Can you describe an A-1's landing in slightly different language than you described it upstairs?
Well, it's sort of just, it comes in at a disgraceful airspeed, for one thing. Anything that flies that slow this day and age, I don't know. But it comes in and it sort of squats and just sits there, and it's there. You know, all of a sudden it's there. And the difference between that and a jet, it's you don't see it and then it's there.
How about you? What do you think of the jet's landing run?
The control crashes. Generally not controlled, you mean. There is a tremendous amount of difference in watching them, the way the two operate. We have some distinct advantages. We can take lower winds. We can take a bigger difference in the crosswinds. We can vary our approach to meet the ship, whereas they pretty much drive it in. And there's a lot of difference in technique involved. Our way is a lot more fun and a lot hotter.
You guys ever get a chance to switch jobs?
Would you? You mean his airplane?
Mm-hmm.
No. No. I couldn't fly it. I honestly don't think I could fly it now. I've been flying jets for forever now, and it's quite an airplane to fly. I'll give him credit for that. It's an old bird, and it's a powerful one. But they've got quite an airplane there.
How about you? This isn't the way it goes in the wardroom. We're a dying breed, obviously. The airplanes, the number of them is limited. The length of time they'll be around is limited, but you couldn't find a more ideal machine for the type of mission we're doing here. It's perfect. It's adaptable, and it's great fun. I've got some flight time in jets, and it's a completely different world. You treat it differently, you fly it differently. The whole environment is completely different. Just a little comparison, really.
I've flown in both, and I was surprised at the physical beating you take in an A1.
It's a jet is smooth normally, unless you're at low altitudes when there's turbulence, but it's a lot quieter. But there's not that beating around and the turbulence. We're in a pressurized cockpit all the time with air conditioning, which they do envy us with the air conditioning. We can make it snow in the middle of this weather right here, right in the cockpit. You get snowflakes in there or as hot as you want it. So we have more advanced as far as that goes.
And we have a 2,700 horsepower heater.
With carbon monoxide to back it up.
How do you feel about the A1s dying out? Is this going to be the last of the good prop-driven fighters?
Well, unless they come along with something that's turbine-powered, a turboprop of some sort, which it looks like they're working on, I don't see how they can really let the breed die. It just has too big of a place in this type of situation. And if we're ever involved again, we're going to be caught short, I think. Of course, that's a limited opinion.
Dick, have you ever had a target where you wish you were flying a slower aircraft so you could maybe get down lower and get in more?
Well, the targets say something about that. These guys, they see the ground fire where we don't. They're flying at half the speed we fly at. They see it, so I'm sure they can hear it sometimes. We don't see it. We get hit, but they get hit twice as much. The targets, as far as hitting the targets, they have better accuracy, I'll admit that, because they go slower. They can go lower, but no, I don't think I've ever seen a target where I'd rather not be in a jet.
How about up some of those mountain valleys?
I'd rather have the power to get out of the mountains, out of the valleys. I don't want to hang on a prop getting out of there. I'd rather have the power.
We do get hit a lot more. We're going so much slower. Actually, our speed in the runs is about 3/4 their speed when we're actually bombing. But we can afford to be hit a lot more because we do have the armor plating, and generally speaking, we don't even know it. The kind of a hit that we can take, especially with the type of fire we draw down here, we don't know about until someone tells us after we get back to the ready room. And we hope we find a bullet inside rather than a piece of a bomb fragment, which happens fairly frequently.
That interview by ABC's Roger Peterson with Lieutenant Commanders Ron Pickett and Dick Wood, who fly prop and jet planes from the carrier Intrepid. Now, those two men and all the other flyers who fly missions in North and South Vietnam know that if they are shot down, another group of flyers is ready to rescue them, the para-rescue men who man the Jolly Green Giant helicopters. This week, tapes of the men aboard one of those helicopters were made available in Vietnam. Men of the 38th Aerospace Rescue and Recovery Squadron had picked up Lieutenant J.G. Dieter Dengler, who wandered in the jungles for 23 days after escaping from the communists. Pararescue man, Airman First Class Mike Leonard, described the moment of Dengler's rescue.
We'd come over the area after we had spotted him. We'd come over the area, made one pass, drop our tank. On the second pass, we come in, the hoist operator let the cable out. He must have used about 150, maybe 175 foot of cable. Set it down in the ground, a survivor got in it. It took him a couple of seconds to figure out how it operated. He was a little excited and glad to be there, and he just had a little problem. He made it on the hoist all right. We hoisted him up, got him on board. I reached out and pulled him in as he got up beside the aircraft. And at that moment, he kind of went to pieces, as you expect. He just started, he grabbed, held me around the leg, and he just happy to be aboard. Kind of hard to explain what he did, but how he did it. But actually, it's hard to say if he said anything except, "Oh God." That's probably about the first word he ever said. Well, I listened to him all the way. I talked to him a little bit. He went in shock on me three different times. I was pretty busy there trying to keep him in the best shape I could, mentally as well as physically. And in physical shape, he was in excellent physical shape. Took care of himself real well. He told me of what had happened, where he had been, his name, rank, serial number, and things like this.
But for many, the war in Vietnam did not have the happy ending that it did for Dieter Dengler, safe now in a hospital in California. This is the report from Saigon this morning on those men who died in Vietnam last week.
The U.S. killed an active figure of 99. It is down from the preceding week, 136. It is also below the July average, which was an average of 104 per week.
Repeating, 99 killed in action this week. Now, those casualty figures, lower than the previous week, reflect most of the massive fighting of Operation Hastings now over near the DMZ in South Vietnam. An assessment of the Hastings operation from General William Westmoreland in this interview by ABC's Roger Peterson.
What do you think the North Vietnamese were massing for, sir? Do you have any idea?
I think they planned to come across the demilitarized zone in division strength, hoping to catch the Vietnamese forces or any American forces in the area by surprise in order to win a much-needed victory.
Well, we've busted this one up. This is another large victory for us, isn't it? We've had some good operations all around the country. Like
this has been a very significant victory, one of many that we have been fortunate to enjoy.
Do you think this is one of the largest victories we've had? Is it one of the more significant ones, sir?
It is a significant victory. We've had others that are comparable, but this is a very significant victory.
A look forward by General Westmoreland's counterpart in the U.S. Navy, the commander of the 7th Fleet, Admiral John Hyland.
Modern wars, particularly one like this, seems to me a combination of military and political things. We have the military forces available to crush North Vietnam completely. Our government doesn't apparently have that as a policy right at the moment. I would say that whenever our military forces meet theirs, we're going to be able to defeat them.
And if the communists are at last defeated in Vietnam, a large measure of the credit will go to 99 GIs killed in action and 534 wounded in Vietnam last week. This is Don Gardner, ABC News, New York.
Vietnam Update, a weekly report on the United States fighting man in Vietnam. Everything is real. The voices, the situations, the actual combat. Vietnam Update, report number 38, the real story of war in Vietnam. ABC reporters in the field in Vietnam. Roger Peterson on Operation Hastings, and also aboard the aircraft carrier Intrepid. Ed Needham in Saigon, and Robert Metcalf in Bangkok, Thailand. ABC field producers Elliot Bernstein and Robert Lukeman. Vietnam Update was written and produced by H. Paul Jeffers. Executive producer Tom O'Brien. Directed by Bill Gately. Audio engineering by Gene Carlson and Pete Sarantopoulos. This is George Hansbrough inviting you to keep up with developments in Vietnam with ABC Radio News every hour through the day and on Vietnam Update each week. And with special reports as developments demand on this ABC Radio News station.